All right, so I'm Chris.
And I'm Owen.
And welcome to the Dead Wargamers Society. So we're looking at what we've been up to for the past couple weeks since our last recording. So Owen, why don't you take it off? What's new over in Columbus?
Oh, this and that. Painting some Dark Age stuff for whenever we're able to get out and actually play some games again. I've got some Brood models on the painting table that I've been dragging my feet on. I've had some video game stuff that I've been causing me to slack on my painting. Outside of that, I actually just picked up some more Eden. Funny enough, since we're talking about that today. So I'll have some Ascaris and then some a few things that I've been missing for my Horde army that will be coming in the mail in the next week. How about you, Chris?
I've also been painting up some Dark Age, primarily looking into Isaac at this point, which has given me an opportunity to kind of play with some color schemes that I really don't do too often. primarily like a lot of white and black as, you know, the two furthest contrasts from each other you can be, with some neon orange to spice it up a little bit. And I've also kind of been theorying out, I know you and I have talked about it a little bit, but the smaller scenarios for Dark Age, so that players who don't have a 4x4 table space to easily play can use a Warcry or, I guess also Kill Team, single mat, which is a 22x30, which is a little bit more table-friendly, and, you know, a little bit more thought has gone into it rather than just, oh, if we just, you know, cut this off the deployment edges and it works. you know, it's really looking into, you know, what factions might have a advantage, what factions might be at a disadvantage. Like, does it really, really favor any type of playstyle? And what are some things that could be done to kind of address those in the scenario? That's a lot of the gaming stuff I've been doing. Also, like you know, some video games have definitely been distracting from the wargaming side of things, but trying to get a little bit in each week.
Right on. Awesome. Cool. Well, with that having been said, let's talk about the main event for the episode. So, Eden, a tabletop war game from France. We'll just cover some brief background of just the facts about the game. So Eden was a French tabletop war game created by Pierre Jouan and Mohamed, a.k.a. Mohand Alt-Metti. And I apologize if I'm butchering those names. Any of the French folks listening, please yell at me. Eden was initially released in 2009 and published by a company called Taban Miniatures. They actually transferred who was publishing the game to Happy Games Factory in December 2014. It was a skirmish war game, typically with two players, although they did have multiplayer scenario rules. Each player would usually have somewhere between 3 to 8 miniatures, although 4 to 5 is probably more common. These were 32mm scale miniatures manufactured in either pewter or resin. The game was played in a 2x2 or 2-foot by 2-foot table with alternate activations and used D6s. Unfortunately, the game stopped production in 2020 after Happy Games Factory publicly announced they're having some financial difficulties and would close operation. You think I missed anything in there, Chris? Anything to add there?
No, I think that covers the brief summary of that. going into general fiction for Eden, it's really neat. I've had a chance to read through the book, and when I got it, I couldn't put it down. There's a few things that make it a little bit different and kind of set it apart from similar settings, where it is a post-apocalyptic setting with a lot of humanity trying to rebuild. But unlike a lot of post-apocalyptic, you know, games and movies, it takes place in Europe and not in the United States.
As an American, let me just say I am horribly offended at this and feel that I need restitution.
which makes it pretty interesting to see just like the influences and how that works. And I think what also sets it apart is it was not one specific like apocalyptic disaster. It was, you know, it was a vague collection of several different things that led to the downfall of humanity, which makes it pretty neat. There are mutants involved attacking from different areas. There's robots, there's aliens, there's actually a clown faction, Scottish zombies, weird kind of mutant octopus people and angry bikers, and a church convoy that worships water. So it's a really just neat setting, with a lot of bizarre things that all kind of fit into place pretty nicely.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good way to give a quick overview. In terms of mechanics, that was actually really what hooked me into the game. And you probably heard us say, okay, this is a tabletop skirmish game, it's post-apocalyptic, uses D6s with alternating activation. Well, that sounds like a lot of other games in the market. In the most concise way I can summarize Eden is by saying it's extra. There's a ton of things that will feel very familiar to you, and then there's a little bit more. And there's a whole lot of just a little bit more that adds up into a really unique, nice flavor, and to me makes it one of the more compelling tabletop skirmish games. So just to give you an example of some basics, each model has 4 stats. Okay, models have stats in games. Nothing too surprising there. You've got a size stat, a combat stat, a vigor stat, and a speed stat. And those are associated with 4 hitbox locations. Okay, you know, we've seen similar things in other games. So each of those hitbox locations has what the game calls constitution points, but you can think of them as just hit points. And as you fill them in, your model may get a worse stat. So let's say you have a combat stat of 5/4. You're better when you're undamaged, but as you mark off your hit points, you'll go down, and once there's no more white hit points shown, then you use the bottom number. So you'd go from having a stat of 5 to a stat of 4. If you end up getting all the boxes filled in any one limb, that model's removed. So that sounds pretty easy, but there's some really interesting tricks in terms of how you fill in and how you determine where those damage goes. So you have a D6 that's associated with each position, a number on a D6 with each position on a model's card. So 1 is typically the head, which is associated with psi, 2 and 3 are typically combat, 4 and 5 are vigor, etc., etc. But when you roll a damage location, you can reduce the number of hits you do to more accurately target a specific limb. So there's some interesting kind of like little mini games that go on when you do something just as basic as combat. But it's nice to see that with just 4 numbers, 4 locations, they're able to bake a lot of really interesting information into something pretty simple.
So when you look at the model, I think action points is definitely something that most mini gamers are used to, especially in a skirmish setting. With Eden, each one has 3, but unlike some of the other systems, you don't need to spend them all during the model's activation itself. You can actually kind of hold on to certain to react to other model like actions. So you, if a model attacked you and you still had AP left, you could use that to parry or counterattack. So it turns your action points into a little bit more of a resource to be conscious about during the game.
Yeah, to me, this reminds me a lot of another French war game, Confrontation. The combat system of which is also something that's very similar in another game called Bushido, in which case you, when you enter hand-to-hand combat, each model has dice that you can assign to attack or defense. You kind of hide those from your opponent and then reveal them and then resolve that. This feels very similar to that, but what I like is it's a lot more streamlined. It doesn't slow things down as much as, to me, I feel that style of rule does. You know, one of the other combat stats we talk about was speed. Now, you might be thinking, okay, cool, that's how far a model can move. Well, that's actually different in this game. In Eden, because it's on such a small table, models in general just move 10 centimeters, or you can think of that as being about 4 inches. Their speed stat is actually a trump card a model can play when another model activates. So let me give you an example. It's alternating activations. Let's say Chris and I are playing a game, and it's his turn to activate a model. He picks a model, and we look at that model's speed statistic. So let's say he has an average speed of 4. If I have any models that have a speed higher than 4, I can what's called interrupt his activation and say, no, that model's not going to go. My model with a higher speed is going to go instead. And what's cool is, let's say I pick a model with a speed of 5. Chris then has an opportunity to say, no, my model with a higher speed of 6 is actually going to go instead. And you go back and forth until one model with the highest speed actually gets selected. they do their activation, and then the activation flips to the other person. So you can be a little bit tactical about that. Chris can say, I'm going to pick this model with four because I know Owen really doesn't want him to go. So he's going to try to trump. And when he does that trump, I have a trump yet higher and can kind of force that out. So it's an interesting little twist on alternating activations where you don't end up in a situation as often in Eden where at the start of the turn, you look at the board and go, okay, we're going to make some sort of initiative roll, and whoever wins is going to win the game. It does add a little bit more tactical thought into a fairly small, again, otherwise simple game.
So the other thing being that you're talking about missions and replay is essentially the game works with an asymmetrical mission. So players choose the mission that they want to play at the beginning of the game, and each player chooses their own. Sometimes those missions are secret from their opponent. Sometimes they're revealed missions. Some do focus on more killing aspects. There's a lot of missions available that aren't. Some missions are faction specific, and some are also generic. So there's a lot of options going into a game. And what's really cool about that is it does give you a lot of replay value. Even if you have the same one or two people that you play on a regular basis with the same one or two factions, just the amount of missions you can kind of filter through and how your opponent might pick one, you'll pick a completely different thing, will kind of change that up. As far as the secret missions go, that might be similar for Malifaux players, because it does kind of function on a very similar kind of way with a... you have your card, you put it face down. Sometimes there's an area on the card where you might need to like identify a model or identify like, you know, an objective or something similar. But that stays unrevealed until it's time for you to reveal it based on the specifics of the mission. The other interesting part with a lot of the missions is that they do actually change your deployment. So certain missions will have you deploying your models in different ways, which can be, you know, a definite factor in what mission you want to play based on the army and the models that you're taking with you.
Definitely. And one of my favorite things about Eden is there's some missions that actually trump your opponent's missions. So there's a few that say, if you get to pick your mission first, you can pick this mission. And if you do, your opponent doesn't get to pick a mission. You're both playing this mission. So you might end up against a force that you say, okay, I know they have a mission that's really good against my army. So if I can win that role, I can then kind of jump the gun and stop him from taking the mission that would really put me at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
We talked about just kind of differences in this game. You mentioned factions. Well, there's actually two different ways you can build your army. Every model in the game has a faction, and most models in the game also have what's called a stigma. You can think of this as kind of being like your alignment in Dungeons & Dragons. So there's five different options here: chaos, order, protection, change, and destruction. In addition to being able to build a force around a faction, you can also build a force around a stigma. So if all the models in this force have the same stigma, you can actually put them together across factions, which can be really, really, really interesting. And it lets you play with models that you might think look really cool, but otherwise you don't want to invest in an entire, you know, force of that particular faction. You just think that one model is really cool. This is a nice way to bring those models together, to kind of mix things up. There are some slight disadvantages. You get less strategy points, which is something we'll talk about a little bit later. But it is a nice way to just kind of keep things fresh and use your models in a different way than you otherwise might be able to do. In addition to that, some of the missions actually are stigma specific. So if you're not playing a faction, you still have some options for special missions based around the theme of your force.
Yeah, I've only built out a faction. Building by stigma is definitely something that I don't have a lot of experience with. Theorying it out, I think, as I was reading over the rules, it's something that's a really neat option, especially because exactly what you said, like, sometimes you see this one model and you're like, man, I super duper love this model, I want to put it on the table, but
yep.
I don't either the playstyle of the faction or the other models in the faction don't really appeal to me. So this gives you the opportunity to be like, okay, well, you know what? Like, this is a chaos thing. Maybe I can look at my main faction and find the other chaos models in that faction and you know, make a list just to use this one model. It might not be the most competitive, but like it lets you do some interesting things.
Definitely.
Looking into what Owen had mentioned with the strategy points, you have tactical cards. Tactical cards you have a hand of, which you choose, and it gives you abilities to buff or debuff models for your army. There's a couple other weird ones in there, like yep. that will just do some strange things. But you have a lot of options. This definitely just like blew me away, because I printed out the cards. You have generic cards, you have stigma cards, you have faction cards, and you even have like sub faction cards of like if you're playing these specific models within this force, you can take this kind of card.
Sorry, go ahead.
They use those the strategy points in order to play the cards. And that's the same resource that you're going to use for certain special abilities on your models. And it's also the same way that you decide who's going first. So those strategy points are definitely like a resource that can be used in different ways. So it's important to kind of try and figure out like, what's important to you, what is the most important thing. And I don't think there's usually a lot of situations where you end up just like kind of being like, ah, you know what, like I have so much extra SP, I'm just gonna just burn it, you know. It's like there's always like something important that you could be doing with that resource.
Definitely. One of the things I like about this resource a lot is the way you determine how many strategy points you have is by adding up the psi value of all the models in your force, and that's your starting pool of strategy points. What's nice about that is I feel like in most tabletop war games, either your psychology or your morale score is usually something of a dump stat. Like, if it's really bad, okay, that might have a deleterious effect. But otherwise, most things are pretty good at, you know, not getting scared. And Eden, that can actually be a really important statistic. So you might have two different pieces in your army. One that has a gun and has a slightly better strategy score. And one that's got a gun, but a slightly worse strategy score, but maybe a better speed. There's still really a compelling reason to take a model with a higher strategy score, because it gives you more of this resource. You can do more stuff with your models. Another thing Chris didn't mention, which is also really cool, is the cards are balanced in really interesting ways. So unlike missions, which will lock you out of taking them if you're not a specific stigma or faction, tactic cards can be taken by anyone, but the way that they tend to be more selective is by their effect. So a tactical card may give a buff, but only to mutants in your force, or only to robots in your force. In addition to that, as Chris mentioned, they can be even more selective, so only Red Order Matriarchy sisters in your force. Some of the stronger cards also have a special rule called Cancellation. What that does is it allows your opponent to spend a number of strategy points, typically 4, but sometimes more or less, to stop you from playing that card. And what gets interesting is the little mini game of, okay, I'm going to play this card, and if I get the buff, that's awesome, but I might just want to try to drain my opponent's strategy reserve down, so next turn, I can bid way more strategy points to go first.
Yep.
So, having mentioned all that, I think it's also worth mentioning what makes the factions different. So in a lot of other mini games, it tends to be a mechanical hook. So this is the shooty faction. This is the sneaky melee faction. This is the tanky melee faction. And what I like about Eden is that's generally not how forces are made. Thematically, oftentimes the models tend to be more reflective of a background material than they are of a strict mechanical material. However, all the factions tend to have a hook, like a special rule that's really unique to that faction if you're playing that faction. So, for example, ISC, It was actually one of the rare ones where it's not a special rule. It's just something unique about their models. They're robots, and as a result, they don't have red constitution points, so that they never get a worse value. They have a single value, and they only have white boxes. Beyond that, they have, generally speaking, fairly high armor. In the game, this is called protection. That makes them very difficult to damage, but to balance that out, they only have one or two hitboxes. What makes that interesting is there's a lot of abilities that just chip through damage, particularly things like the burn special rule. So certain things are very good against robots, and they've done a fairly decent job of making that thematic. But it also then says, okay, healing's maybe a little bit less interesting to an ISC player. So even though they're tanky, it's hard to really stack a bunch of buffs onto your force in a way that you might be able to in an otherwise designed game. Another great example, we talked about white and red constitution boxes. There's a sub-faction called Khans, which are like angry super mutants from Mongolia. And their special shtick in terms of mechanics is they have an additional color of hitboxes that are blue. And in general, when they get to just having blue boxes shown, their stats actually get significantly better. So they really want to take just a little bit of damage, but their red stats also tend to be pretty poor. So you're always kind of balancing that edge of, okay, I want to take some damage, but not enough to really get me to where I'm hurting. I picked those two examples because ISC and Khans have a reputation for being kind of the big bruisery factions. You want to run up and hit things. ISC has some options. Beyond that, they have a lot of control options. But it's common to see both forces, you know, take really large models, a small number of models that just run across the table and murder things. But the way they go about doing it, the way they go about being tanky, is completely different, which is a nice way to keep things fresh.
Yeah, and I think that's also true in some other things, like the ISC has typically super high psi scores, which I think is a little bit different from the Khans. So the ISC, you're usually starting out with a really big reserve of strategy points, even though you're playing down less models than your opponents might bring. So it also, you know, again, it they do a lot of things to both in that every faction has its special thing, as well as that the faction's kind of scores themselves are going to be geared in a certain direction compared to other factions that do similar things.
Yeah, it's the game has 13 factions, not including the five stigmas. So there's a huge number of releases. Each faction has, you know, depends. Some of the newer ones only have maybe a half a dozen or a dozen models. Some of the older ones have upwards of 20. For a game with 3 to 5 models, it's also interesting to see, you know, I talked about before, ISC has a tendency to be kind of tanky and spanky, but with 20 different models, all of which do very different things, you can really play that faction in surprisingly unique ways. You can go for something that's completely control-based or completely fear-based, which is a condition you can put on a model that stops it from being able to make attacks. So it's really surprising for, again, a game where you only have literally a handful of models, how much replay value and how different you can get even within a single faction. All right, so Chris, what do you think are some things that you might tell someone that's interested in the game that would be things they should be on the lookout and would make you think they're really going to like the game?
So I think this is going to be one of my sticking points a lot of the time as we go over a few of the smaller skirmish games. But for me, a very small play area is awesome. I think that it being on a 2x2 really gives the opportunity to play in like a wide variety of spaces. It also makes it a much lower, it chips into the most much lower investment cost to get into the game, because when you have a much smaller play area, you know, the mat's going to cost less. You don't have to invest in any type of table topper. You're going to have a little bit less terrain on the table, because even though there's a decent amount of terrain in the game, you only have a 2x2 thing, so that's not too big. And there's also a really small model count, which is kind of doubled down on that almost all the starter boxes, it might actually be all the starter boxes, are actually a full army. It's not like a lot of other games where when you pick up a starter, it's like, okay, the starter is, you know, your first 25 points out of 75 points, or the, you know, like the starter gives you these two types of models, but now you want to go out and buy some like infantry or this or that. The starter is a full 100-point box, and even though you have the option to go out and buy other blisters and swap things in and out, you can open up a starter, glue the models together, and you're all ready to play your first game.
Yeah, that's a really good point about the starter box. I love that you get missions and tactical cards, and generally speaking, tactical cards that are pretty good for the faction that they're supposed to represent. You mentioned the small model count. One of the things that really hooked me on Eden was it was a small model count game, but man, those models are beautiful. I will kvetch about how much I don't like, too much detail on games where you need, 50 or 100 models. A game where you need five, bring the detail on. These are beautiful, well-detailed models, but it's the right amount of detail. It's not, skulls everywhere for the sake of skulls. It's just enough to keep things interesting, even in very large models. And there's some really unique concepts here. Things like the Sargerians, which are a group of renegade scientists from India that have, undersea creatures that they used as cannon fodder in advance of them moving into territory. Or the ISC, which are a weird mix of different Japanese robots. Or the Bamaka clans, which are angry mutants that actually are very egalitarian, very peaceful. They're kind of the good guys to some extent to the game. From Africa, that they're now invading to try to take territory over in Europe, much to the terror of some of the locals. There were just some really unusual things here beyond kind of the usual post-apocalyptic. Oh, okay, this is kind of like this from Fallout, or oh, this is kind of like that from Gamma World. There was some really there was some effort and some love put into some of the thoughts here.
Yeah, all that and a little bit of crazy. So when you also, I think another big thing is just the high degree of replay value on it is really awesome. There's a lot of reasons for it. Partially in that the games take a really short time to play, so you can get a few rounds in a day, which is always a benefit. Or you can also just, hey, I have an hour after work. Like, let's get together. Let's bang this game out. Also, the low investment cost for the game means that you can easily invest in a few factions, or even just like a full faction, which will give you tons and tons of models and different armies that you can actually make out of that, is really neat. I think when you compare it to some other things where it's like, all right, it's going to cost me $600 to get one army, like not a faction, not like an army with options, like this is my army. It was $600. This is what I can play. That same $600 will get you somewhere around 12 starter boxes, as crazy as that is, for Eden. And being that they're all like, like you said, between three and maybe six models, three and seven models, you can store that super easy. Like, that takes up such a small amount of space. And along with that, all of those factions, where you have 13 factions, which a lot of times have sub factions within the faction, plus all the different stigma combinations that you can make, mean that there's a lot of replayability because it's not just the same things fighting each other over and over again. And like we mentioned before, the different missions, where even if even if you have your favorite army and your favorite opponent has their favorite army, Owen and I can play ISC versus Bamaka 30 times, and it might be a different experience every single one of those times due to us taking different models, different missions, and different tactic cards.
Yeah, I the mission thing is one thing that I'll harp on to death because I love the idea of asymmetrical missions. I think Eden has done it in one of the best ways I've ever seen a game do it, and just the sheer replayability just due to that. There's so many skirmish games I play where, okay, what mission are we going to play? Well, there's six in the back of the rule book. Well, okay, like we all kind of know how that goes. So, yeah, the investment there to me is one of the things that really knocked Eden out of the park for me. So, Chris, we talked about reasons someone might really like this game. What are
I was
some
gonna say
things?
the one smaller one to add in before we move on, like what might be keeping this game from you? D6s. And it sounds like a silly thing, but every gamer out there has D6s. I mean, people who have Monopoly on their shelves have D6s. And when it comes down to just playing a game, being able to play it with the components that you have at home always makes it a little bit easier. I can't tell you the amount of times where I've started like a new game, and if it's, you know, proprietary dice, it, you know, just not enough come in the first box and you got to track down extras, or if it's, you know, a like an off die, like a d10 or a d12, just trying to find the singles without buying full sets of RPG dice can start, just like, it can be a little bit of a struggle. So having just a, you know, your simple standard d6 makes life a lot easier.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. It's one of the things I like about older games is there was less component creep. You know, it was, I can't think of a game from pre-2010 that was really big into bespoke dice. I remember, you know, Warhammer Fantasy RPG came out around that time, and the fact they used bespoke dice was something of a controversy. So yeah, great point there. You know, we've talked a lot about the great things about the game. What are some reasons in your mind that this might not be a game that someone would like?
So there's a decent amount of record keeping in the game. And there's not really a app to track it in. So because of the way that your damage is distributed throughout different kind of subsystems, you definitely need card sleeves. You definitely need like a wet erase or a dry erase marker. It's something to keep track of. You do need, even though you don't need a lot of different types of tokens to play the game, because the effects in game are pretty easy, you do need like a method of tracking different things for a few different things in every game, no matter what faction you play. You know, you have to be able to track your AP, because it's not just a simple matter of this model activated, spent 3 AP, and it's done. Like, you know, you might be camping an AP or two on a model after it activates, so you have to be able to kind of mark that as well as the model's activation. You have to be able to keep track of your SP. You have to be able to keep track of the points that you're scoring. So there's a decent amount of record keeping, which for some people, and I know they're not kind of fans of, and that might be a reason that Eden might not appeal to some people.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one thing that I've struggled with locally is, you know, and not passing any value judgments here at all, there are some cheesecake models in the earlier stuff. So if you're someone that looks at a game and sees, you know, particularly from the stuff from 2009, some female models that were a bit on the scantily clad side and not terribly well proportioned to be realistic in combat, that's a turnoff for some people. And there was some of that in the earliest stuff. I would say that The matriarchy, I think, got the worst of that, the Black Order in particular. Most of the models that I thought were particularly egregious were resculpted. You know, one other difference here is there are some cultural norms that are different in Europe than there are in the U.S. There are a few models that even I would argue are probably not in the cheesecake category. So there's a model in the con sub faction called Bort that's supposed to be a female model without a top on. That can be something of a concern for some people. You know, that's not a model I would probably take to a convention if I was doing demos, particularly, you know, like during normal business hours. So if that's a concern, that might be something that keeps someone away from the game.
I mean, on the flip side to that, which I do think is one of the benefits to it being a dead game, is that you really don't have to worry about your local game store not stocking the product because of those reasons, which is definitely a concern with, you know, more current games. You know, I remember, you know, way back in the day, there were a lot of issues in finding like the family friendly local game stores that were carrying some of the Slaanesh models.
Yep.
Where the demonettes with exposed boobs and stuff like that were just not a thing. It's just like, nope, we can't carry that here. We, you know, also have, you know, model railroad toys and, you know, all these model kits. We have, you know, parents bringing in kids all the time. This isn't something we can have up there. So the fact that the game is a little bit more dead does mean that you don't have to worry as much about it being carried in your local store. And also along kind of the same thing, if this is something that might be an issue for you, like if you don't want to put those models on the table, or you're embarrassed to put those models on the table for whatever the reason, it's going to be a little bit easier to proxy stuff in. You know, the game's yeah. dead, so being able to pop in a proxy or a conversion, you can definitely find some better fitting models that don't have those same issues that you have.
I definitely think if you're looking at this for... as a game you're only going to play with your friends, your local play group, that's definitely something that with proxies can solve the issue for you. I do have friends that like to bring their kids with them to conventions, so they're always a little bit gun-shy about, like, is this going to be an issue for this game? Because, you know, I don't want to have to explain to six-year-old Billy, yada, yada, yada. So I can understand it. In terms of other issues, and this is one I'm just thinking of now, but it's something I've encountered from other wargamers. One thing to note, the game is from Europe. It is in metric. So if you have an irrational hatred of the metric system, this is probably not the game for you.
Yep. Yeah. that was definitely a little bit of a shock to the system when doing it. Because you just have these ideas in your head about, like, oh, you move 10, like, wow, that's gonna be awesome. And then it's like 4 inches. It's like okay, that's not gonna work as well. It can also be a little bit more of a struggle sometimes in the US finding measuring tools that actually work for yep. centimeters, but I do think there's a few out there that make some decent centimeter measuring sticks or widgets, and legitimately, like, hitting eBay to get some tape measures that have the CM as the prominent measurement on them is only going to cost a couple bucks most of the time.
I think it's definitely a solvable problem. You know, I've got a lot of widgets in metric. When Infinity went from being in metric to being in Imperial, a lot of the older widgets are now on clearance, so it's definitely something that's fixable. But I do know some people that just, if the game's in metric, they will not play it. So if that's a concern, hey, just a heads up.
Yep, totally fair. And last up, when it comes down to balance, some people want a super duper balanced game, and I think there's a friendly level of balance in Eden. There's not a lot of things that are, it's not a regular thing of like, well, this faction is totally, totally broken. Like, you take this, you're gonna win, you know? Yep. But there are some things out there that are a little bit on the cheesier side. One or two things, you know, that I've seen can be like a little bit more of a negative play experience, especially for a newer player. For, you know, those of you who are looking for like the be all end all, and like, I can take literally anything and play it against anything else, and, you know, it's going to have chess level balance, this might not be your game.
I would add to that. I think one of the things that Eden can be a little bit of a shock for is, let's say you and a friend pick up Eden, and you pick the models that you think look really cool, they all happen to be on a theme, and you pick a mission because it sounds cool. There can be cases where the missions are designed around the idea that there can be bad matchups, but you can kind of, if you know what your opponent can take, you know what you can take, you can pick in ways that stop that from being a problem. But when you're new to the game, you can accidentally step into a situation where one army has a significant advantage. I would say as you get more into the game, that's less of a concern. It's probably not a concern on game one. But when you get to game 10, you might have some pain points as you're still learning some of that. When you get to game 100, it's probably not an issue anymore. But, you know, as a dead game, you're probably not playing 100 games routinely. If you're picking this up because you like the look of it, you want to try it with your friends, just a heads up that there may be some cases where things don't feel so great. So I'll give you a for example. The Khan faction has a mission around killing more models. The number of victory points you're able to gain from that as the number of models you kill goes up gets very, very, very large, to the point where I don't believe reasonably other missions can even compete with the total number of points you can score. Let's say you have a friend playing that and who picks that mission, who then plays the Horde faction, which has the ability to take probably the largest number of the models in the game. And you do that because, hey, I want to have a beastmaster running a bunch of wild animals. That sounds really cool. You pick a mission, you know, whatever it is, and the comm player is just able to run roughshod over you, just in terms of victory points, not even in terms of playing the game. But when you get to the end, the comm player has to do a lot less comparatively to get rack up a huge scoreboard compared to the horde player. That's something that I know that they were always updating the missions. From what I can glean via Google Translate of the French Discord for the game, there was kind of a French tournament pack of things that everyone agreed was pretty balanced. If you're just kind of playing around, though, you may stumble into one of those pain points. I would say don't dump the game if you hit that once. Try a different mission. Try mixing things up just a little bit. In general, that's not an issue for the game, but it can be something that you stumble into.
I do think that's something I've seen in a lot of the event primers. Usually, like when people are running an event, there is a list of just missions that aren't going to be available.
Yep.
Which I think is the best way to handle it, just because, hey, there's a couple, which, like you said, it gets to a point where it's almost not fair. There's just a couple missions out there where you have the option of racking up a banana's amount of points compared to to other missions. And the nice thing is that there's enough other missions out there where it's not like someone's completely nerfing a faction. They're just bringing a little bit more balance out there by limiting it. And it's an across the board thing. It's not like if you're playing, White Order, you have these two missions, and both those missions are banned, but every other faction gets their stuff. It's kind of like an across the board. There's a couple. I think that con mission has come up before, especially in Europe, because it seems like in Europe they a lot more people do play numerous model factions and lists than what I've seen in the States. The States, I've seen a lot more of I take these three things, deal with it.
I find too that, this is a game, from what I can glean via Google Translate, that the largest concentration of fans of the game is in France, which is unsurprising. It's a French game. The US, there were different play groups that picked it up. It was really great at Adepticon 2019, meeting some other people that played the game in the run-up to Adepticon 2020. I know you and I were both excited to play in an Eden tournament that some folks from Madison were putting on. I think that's awesome. It really seemed like the game was coming together. I think it's unfortunate that Happy Games Factory, ran into the trouble they did. I know they were truly trying to get into the States for a long time. But, looking at the U.S. or the English Discord, I don't really think there's a meta. I think there's fans of the game that want to get out there and playing it, but I don't think it ever got to the point where a large N number of people were playing the game, and therefore a competitive meta. This was really more a game that people were like, hey, this is a fun game, let's play. So I tend to prefer games like that, but I would say, having played it with a former roommate for a while, there were definitely times where we put stuff on the table where we're both still filling out the rules and got to the end and was like, oh that's not good. just a heads up on that.
Speaking of which, going into your favorite memories and moments with the game, what do you have?
So, yeah, speaking of which, my former roommate and I played this game a bit. And I remember early on, we were still kind of figuring things out. I had purchased a Horde box, which contained what's called a Broodmaster, who's this angry zombie clockwork orange looking guy that tortures people, runs a bunch of zombies around. It's got a bunch of really angry zombies in the box, and then this dude with a coffin on his back that debuffs people. It definitely, I was feeling the vibe of it. And my roommate really liked the ISC stuff, so he had taken kind of a stompy list. He had a really big model that I was trying to take down called the Grey Daimyo. Normally he was the leader of his force. I had beat him before, so he took another model called the Grey Kitsune, which is a giant robot fox, as his leader. The reason he did that was the fox has an ability to get out of melee very easily, and I was running an all melee list. So I was looking at his list, was like, okay, I'm going to take a scenario where if I kill something, then I can have my numerous little PUDs spend an action point in base-to-base with an objective that drops with a dead model, get a bunch of tokens at the end of the game for everything still alive, I'll score a bunch of points. My roommate threw up his big Grey Daimyo that was previously unkillable, and my Broodmaster has a special ability that when he's done activating, all the other zombie models in my force can immediately activate sequentially without the ability to be interrupted. So it was he came up, still had a couple of action points, but I was like, aha, I got you. You know, everyone, like, gang charge. He killed, I think, one, maybe two zombies in just with riposte, so you can spend action points to simultaneously attack. He's really good at combat, so he murdered some of my stuff. But I was able to put him down, get some, you know, points, walk away, was feeling really, really good. It was like, okay, you know, I got a bunch of victory points at the end. And he had a secret objective, and I didn't know the IC or the general objectives enough, but I was like, you know, whatever it is, I feel like I did a really good job. So flipped it over, had scored a bunch of points. He flips over his card. It was called the Traitor, and he had nominated his Great Daimyo, and if I killed him, he got all his victory points for him. So he actually ended up outscoring me because I did what I was supposed to do, which was like, oh, that's awesome, you know? Like, that was such a cool, like, gotcha moment.
Yeah, that's... Always a good time. I feel like there's one or two other games that have very similar, like, secret objectives that can be pretty fun. I do like the Traitor for this better than any other game systems, because it's not the be-all end-all. Like, it's that one thing. Like, if this model... if your friendly model dies, you get points. But you also have other, like, mission objectives as well, like points that you kill of your opponent's models. So it's not just like, I'm going to feed you this model to win the game. Like,
yeah,
a lot more going on.
I should mention that, like, that model is worth a lot of points. So, like, you know, I had taken out a good chunk of his army, but, you know, because of that scenario, he also then scored a huge amount. So it was very well played by him. And it was definitely one of those moments where it was like, okay, this is awesome. And then looking at just the sheer number of possible scenarios that could happen, that really hooked me on the game. And just like, wow, like, we can play this again. And there could be other awesome moments like that too, that, like, I can't even think of right now. That was just really, really cool. How about you?
So I'm still super new to Eden, especially compared to the experience that you've had. So I haven't really had many, like, super cool moments besides, you know, getting the models on the table and actually playing a few games. Shortly after, you know, you kind of showed me the game and the models, and we theoried a ton of stuff out online. I did manage to get some matriarchy for my fiance, but all that I could find initially was Green Order. So we put it on the table, she played it out, and Green Order has a few mechanics that are, like, really neat. Like, I look at it and I'm like, oh man, I could do so much stuff with this, but it doesn't really filter into, like, how her playstyle works. I lucked out with Lynn from Metalhead Minis. Put up some Eden models, and she put up a White Order starter, and I got that in for my fiance the same day I finished painting her Green Order. So she had a super happy Eden day, and it's been fun seeing, like, models that she, like, really gets into, as well as, you know, games that we can play together, especially in, like, a smaller size. So that's my fond memory of the game right now, even if it's a little bit on the sappier side.
Hey, your favorite memories are your favorite memories. No judgment here. Yeah, those White Order models are awesome. You know, the Doctor Doom looking brothers, the two sisters are just, you know, great, like, well put together sculpts, easy to put together. Yeah, that it's a shame that more of those boxes weren't made. Was one of my favorite options for the game. And speaking of which, you know, Chris, you know, we're playing tabletop games. A big part of that is the models. What are some of your favorite models for me?
So, again, like, you know, we talked, we saw each other. I saw the models, like, you had brought out to Captain Con, actually. And I was like, oh, these are pretty neat, you know, but nothing really, like, kind of caught my eye right away. But I went on. A lot of the game mechanics kind of attracted me to it, and I went on the site, and as I was scrolling through the pages, it's like, okay, that faction's neat, this faction's kind of cool, and then I hit ISC, and it's like, oh my god! Like, this is it! Like, I don't even care, like, I don't care what they do, how they play, like, I'm gonna make it work! They could be the worst faction in the game, it's gonna be awesome! The ISC models in general just have such, like, an interesting, unique dynamic to them, where it's kind of like this weird mix of Terminator and classic Japan. and weird anime stuff on top of it, and it's just like, okay, like, that's super cool. It's so unique. There's no other game I think that really hits on all of those things. And as you look like deeper into the fluff and stuff like that, like it just all of that really grabbed me. So it became a thing of like, okay, well, where can I find the models that I really want to play? And the one that like popped out the most to me was that gray kitsune that you talked about being your friend's new leader. It's a gigantic fox robot, like not a regular size, like much bigger than a dude, with triple tails. The model itself has like a really cool pose to it, and it also came out in resin, so it wasn't just metal. And I lucked out being able to find the resin model because I like magnetizing my models for transport, and not needing to sink a whole bunch in to move this was nice. It's a super fun model in the game. It has some like really unique rules that interface with the tactics cards, where like even it, like, yeah, you can back it out of combat super easy. You can cause burning on your opponent really, really easy. And it also has some like weird kind of like leadership transfer abilities, which can be very situationally neat. So it's been like the couple times I've gotten on the table, I'd say it's probably almost always been the MVP of the game. And it also just really plays well with the other models in the faction. It's not a model that requires support from other things. It's something that will work no matter what else you kind of want to shift in there with it.
Definitely, definitely. Would you say it's fair to say that that's the model that got you into Eden?
Yeah, I
do. Awesome. Speaking of that, you know, in terms of what got me into the game, the Horde Broodmaster, as mentioned before, it's just, you know, we'll put pictures of the models we're talking about up in the show notes, wherever this gets posted. But like, think about Alex from A Clockwork Orange with half a zombie tied to his waist as he's like torturing it. And just the character and the flavor that they were able to capture in the sculpt. It's over 10 years old now, and it's still just one of my favorite sculpts to date. And in game, it's just a simple, elegant piece. You know, the Horde are kind of the outcast of the Eden world. They're the sub-faction that in general doesn't have stigmas. So, like, if you're playing Horde, you're playing Horde. You're not bringing these pieces in elsewhere. They have some really unique mechanics in terms of gaining a resource called Savagery. So the individual units aren't terribly good, but the masters, like the Broodmaster, accumulate Savagery over the course of the game, and then your other models can spend them off a master model if they're nearby. You know, he just does really simple things, but he does them well. It's all about the alpha melee strike and, you know, knowing when to push the go button. It's the playstyle I love, the model I love. It hit every single note for me. And the fact that I could spend, I think it was $40, $45 to get the box with everything I needed to play the game, you know, short of dice in a tape measure, was just awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually haven't seen that model yet, but I've got to check it out now.
Anything else really catch your eye in terms of models, Chris?
So I haven't been able to find one of my own yet, but I do really, really like the look of the yellow Shinigami. It's a very cool kind of like alternate take where a lot of the faction is very like Japanese-inspired, robot-inspired. This one just looks like a reaper, you know. It's flying on, you know, dead skin wings, and it has a big scythe. Like, it's a very just cool, very metal looking model. And what's interesting for it just in a play style manner is that it has like more of a glass cannon feel in a brute force faction, so it gives like a whole different kind of playstyle just by swapping in that one model, which for ISC, again, you know, usually taking three models, swapping one model out just totally changes everything. So being able to like really vary it up that much is something that's interesting. I've just had, you know, a little bit of trouble in finding that one. So I've been keeping my eye out.
So the bane of that model, and this is funny on a lot of levels, is the only time I've ever seen that model on a table, and I've seen it multiple times in this capacity, is someone will buy it and use it as a proxy for Terminus and War Machine. Because he is everything you wanted out of Terminus and War Machine, just minus the clown.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, I could just go off on this for, way longer than anyone would want to listen to me talk about it. But one more on my end. The Khan subfaction I've talked about a couple times. There's a model named Sook that, if you're familiar with the Fallout series, imagine a super mutant, carrying a bunch of tools on his back with just a gigantic axe. Really, really captures that Fallout super mutant aesthetic. I always thought he was kind of cool looking, and it wasn't until that I purchased him and started painting him for the demos at Captain Con that I really got an appreciation for just how much detail the sculptors had hidden. And, Mohan's studio job on him did such a good job of just seamlessly blending it all together. And it wasn't until I started painting that I was like, oh yeah, they totally didn't miss their stitches here. And it's people talk about models that paint themselves. This for me was a model that I probably spent 4 or 5 hours on. It felt like half an hour. I was hungry for more after it. So yeah, it definitely clicked a lot of buttons for me. And again, it wasn't something that I'd seen a lot in other similar post-apocalyptic skirmish games.
Awesome. So with all these awesome models and everything else, where are people supposed to buy them nowadays?
That's a good question. Unfortunately, the Happy War Games Factory website doesn't have much left, and from what I've heard from other people online, it doesn't tend to be terribly responsive, so I would not recommend there, at least for people in the States. Where I've been buying a lot of my models has been Noble Knight, which is a company that does mail order models from Fitchburg, Wisconsin. They have a good stock. They actually were the U.S. distributor of Eden in its final years. eBay, as always, is a great place to find these models. And then if you happen to be of the Canadian persuasion, Meeplemart has a good number in stock as well.
The only one other place I'd kind of add on in there is Facebook Marketplace.
Yep.
Especially if you're in the right wargaming buy sell trade groups, has been very helpful. I think a lot of it depends on faction. Noble Knight does have like a really good stock. It's pretty bananas the amount of stuff that they have for Eden on there. and especially like if you're looking to play like Convoy, if you're playing Horde, they had like some Bakama on there. Like they have a really good selection. Seems like someone raided their ISC before I could really get to it, though. They have some options. They do have a couple starters, but unfortunately not what I was looking for. So I did manage to luck out, and a lot of that was just through keeping an eye out and searching through the Facebook Marketplace.
Wait a minute. Time out, Chris. Are you telling me that anime robots also happen to be popular with people that play war games? I don't believe you.
Especially in the States? Yeah. What? But anywho, so that's pretty much Eden. It's been a lot of fun. I know Owen has a lot more experience with it than I do, but it's definitely something that's kept him interesting. I just hopped in, and even hopping in as a dead game, I've been able to find everything that I want to find for it, except for that Shinigami. And I've been able to have a lot of fun games. I do see it as something where the more people who I've seen play it, like catch demos of it at conventions or catch demos of it at stores, go out and like immediately go looking for somewhere between 1 and 5 starters. So it's definitely a fun game that kind of just snuck by a lot of people. If you're interested, definitely check out that game. Just moving along to the end of the episode, because I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing us.
Yeah, I would say if this did catch your eye, check out the Happy War Games Factory website, which has all the missions, the cards, pictures of the models available on it. Facebook has a couple of groups, particularly the U.S. Eden Worldwide group. If you're looking for people to play in the States, that's a great resource for that. There's a Discord associated with that as well. There's also a good place to find people on. And, you know, last but not least, big props. The host of the podcast, 3 Men in a War Game, also are community leaders for that game. So if you live in one of the communities that those folks are from, you can probably find some people local to you. And I know that they've mentioned they'd like to run Eden come the other side of COVID. I definitely will be running some Eden at Captain Con, probably in 2022, the next time that will be available. But yeah, don't be a stranger. You know, we'd love to have you try the game. And, you know, Chris and I and a few other folks will do whatever we can to help enable that.
Nice. So it's been fun. Keep in mind, if you enjoy these podcasts, if you want to hear more of us drone on about war games and fun stuff, check us out on social media. We have our Facebook. We are starting up our Discord. I'm going to avoid Owen's notes on the other sites you can find us on.
Chris, don't be ashamed of your OnlyFans. It's okay. Everyone's got to hustle.
But and then moving along, next up for us is going to be Guild Ball, which is a more recent dead game. Hopefully that will not be something where us using that terminology is too fresh of a wound. But I'm anticipating a whole bunch of hate mail for Owen.
Oh, mercy. With that, I think we are going to sign off. This has been Dead Wargamer Society. Hope to see you around soon.
See ya.
Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.